this year, the Toronto Star published an article by a woman named Thelma Morrison titled, "The Truth Is, I Killed My Baby." She writes, "This story is my attempt at being truthful, but of course it's only one woman's truth. Not too long ago, I killed my baby. My husband hates it when I say that. He says I had a legal abortion for sound medical reasons. And he's right, so for his sake I don't say it anymore, but I still think it, because the only way I know how to deal with this is to be as honest as possible. And honestly, that's what I did. Why? It certainly wasn't because I didn't want her." Thelma then goes on to tell how she and her husband had been very eager to have a child, and how her four previous pregnancies had all ended with a miscarriage at the three-month mark. Finally, after getting some medical help, Thelma Morrison finally got pregnant for the fifth time at age 39. She says, "Hardly daring to breathe, I waited yet again for the three-month mark. But this time, I sailed past it without any trouble. I reached 4 months. Then 5. My husband and I were ecstatic. The day I first felt my daughter move within me was the happiest day of my life." About then, Thelma's doctor suggested an amniocentesis test just to make sure the baby was normal. Thelma says, "My baby had Down's syndrome. Was definitely retarded, although nobody knew how severely. Possibly very. I cried for a day and a night. Then I had to decide what to do. In a way, it was a straightforward decision. Both my husband and I believed we shouldn't knowingly bring a baby into the world who wouldn't be able to fend for herself. And we had no ethical or religious convictions against abortion, so the decision wasn't all that hard to make. But it hurt. Because, you see, I loved her. Her name was Margaret, and I was going to call her Maggie. I was going to teach her how to read. We were going to walk together on the beach and laugh at the sandpipers with their tiny, busy feet. And there would be birthday parties and her first date, and later her dad would teach her how to drive. And all the tough stuff, too. I was ready, eager for all of it. Instead, I killed her. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I still believe I acted in my daughter's best interests. What haunts me is that the only decision I was ever able to make on my daughter's behalf was the decision to end her life. My own experience has taught me a lot about judging other people's decisions. Mainly, it taught me not to. Other people in our situation have made a different decision and been glad they did. We all do the best we can. For us, it came down to a question not of life, but of quality of life. Sure, we would have loved her, cared for her, protected her, but there was so much we couldn't protect her from, and eventually, given our ages, she'd have been alone in a very big world. I didn't want that. I didn't want her to be frightened. Not ever. Believe me, I grieve for my daughter, but I did kill her. Because even though my Maggie lives in my heart, she couldn't have lived in the real world. Not really. That's my truth. I just hope it's true." As I read about Thelma's pain in choosing to abort little Maggie, I was deeply stirred. Obviously, abortion is no casual matter to her. She believes she made the right choice, but at the same time, she recognizes the seriousness of her decision. Thelma realizes that she didn't merely terminate a pregnancy or have an intrusive blob of tissue removed. She knows she killed a baby named Maggie, and she did it not so much because she wanted to, but because she felt she had to, for Maggie's own good. Thelma Morrison's article shows us once again that abortion isn't just an abstract political issue. It involves real people in tough situations, and it touches on our deepest beliefs and values. The abortion option seems to make a lot of sense when a child's future would appear to be less than ideal, or when giving birth might hinder the future of a woman or other members of her family. Still, even when it seems to make sense, abortion isn't a casual choice, at least not for women like Thelma Morrison who know what it involves. Many pregnant women sense that something very special is happening inside of them. This awareness is present even in many who didn't want to be pregnant, and of course it's especially true of those who do want a baby. They understand that a unique little child is growing and developing, and they begin to develop strong feelings for that child long before the actual moment of birth. The tenderness that many expectant mothers feel for their unborn children is expressed in this lullaby for the unborn, sung by Betsy Hernandez.
Blessings upon you, my baby unborn, safely inside me, asleep and so warm. Sleep must come easy to those who are unborn, as a maker so silently fashions your
child can arouse deep feelings of affection and wonder and concern. This little one's life is very precious. The Bible shows us that God Himself is shaping the tiny life that begins in the womb. In Psalm 139, the poet writes, "For you, Lord, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be." It's clear from this exquisite poetry that human life begins within the womb and is shaped by the hand of God Himself. But maybe you're not ready to accept what the Bible says. You're more interested in purely scientific and medical facts. Well, if that's the case, you'll still find it hard to avoid the conclusion that unborn children are living human beings. At the moment of conception, when sperm and ovum are united, a new individual is formed with the exact genetic code that will be unique to that individual throughout life. There'll never be another person like it. At that moment, the gender of the baby, whether male or female, is also established. From there on, it's just a matter of development and growth. If you're reluctant to agree that conception marks the beginning of human life, what other biological criteria would you use? To determine whether someone is alive, doctors often check for a heartbeat and for brain activity. When we apply those standards to unborn children, what do we find? Research shows that just 24 days after conception, a tiny heart is beginning to beat. In other words, within 3.5 weeks, before a woman barely suspects she's pregnant, the baby's heart is already beating. Just 20 days after conception, the brain and spinal cord are taking shape, and brain waves have been detected by EEG as early as 43 days, or just 6 weeks after conception. These findings mean that nearly all abortions, even those performed within the first 3 months, stop a beating heart and silence an active brain. So, whether you look at it biblically or only biologically, abortion destroys a living human being. Sally Tisdale, a nurse involved in performing abortions, wrote about her work some time ago in Harper's Magazine. When she's talking with women who are about to have an abortion, she's very careful what she says. She says she never uses the words pain or baby. Even so, some women ask her how big the baby is. Tisdale says that many are relieved when she describes to them a tiny bulbous shape. She tries not to trouble her clients with any information about the baby that they might find disturbing. So, says Nancy Tisdale, sometimes I lie a little, weaseling around its infantile features, until the woman's emotional attachment to the baby is weakened and she feels better about getting rid of it. So how does Nurse Tisdale feel about all this herself? There are weary, grim moments, she says, when I think I cannot bear another basin of bloody remains or utter another kind phrase of reassurance. At the end of the day, I clean out the suction jars, pouring blood into the sink, splashing the sides with flecks of tissue. From the sink rises a rich and humid smell, hot, earthy, and moldering. It is the smell of something recently alive, beginning to decay. I take care of the plastic tub on the floor, filled with pieces too big to be trusted to the trash. Abortion requires of me a new set of assumptions. It requires a willingness to live with conflict, fearlessness, and grief. As I close the freezer door, I imagine a world where this won't be necessary, and then return to the world where it is. In this nurse's opinion, abortion is a grim necessity, and moral questions are ultimately just a luxury for dreamers. Sally Tisdale writes, "We are too busy to chew over ethics." In other words, in the real world, don't bother asking what's right and wrong. Just do what needs doing. If it's necessary to destroy another unborn child, just do it. If it's necessary to lie a little so a client won't feel so bad, just do it. People like Nurse Tisdale may be doing their work out of real concern for people in difficult situations. They see many, many anxious people who are confronting unwanted pregnancies and others whose unborn children will be handicapped in some way. How can they refuse these women the abortion option? Some of these medical professionals may even have treated women who were desperately sick after seeking an illegal abortion from someone who wasn't medically qualified. In the face of all this, they feel that their work is necessary, even if they sometimes find it distasteful. Now, of course, not every person who performs abortions finds them as disturbing and grievous as Nurse Tisdale sometimes does, and not everyone who chooses to abort her baby feels the pain that Thelma Morrison does. There are some who don't take abortion seriously at all. They somehow sidestep the emotional impact by dismissing any thoughts about the unborn child. The only thing that matters is that a woman be able to control her own body and her own future. But for a great many of us, it's not that simple. Even if you favor abortion rights, even if you've had an abortion yourself or are seriously considering it right now, you probably still believe that it's not a decision to be taken lightly. You realize that it's not just another medical procedure. As long as you believe that abortion destroys a developing human life, or even if you only suspect it, you simply can't think about it the way you might think about gallbladder surgery. If the entity being destroyed were nothing but a bothersome mass of cells, then there would obviously be nothing wrong with choosing abortion for any reason whatsoever, or no reason at all. But what if that's not the case? What if abortion really does destroy a human being? We've already seen that according to the Bible, unborn babies are truly human, shaped and given life by God Himself. We've also seen that according to scientific research, the unborn baby has the complete genetic code of a unique human at the moment of conception, and shortly thereafter, a beating heart and a functioning brain. So whether you look at it scientifically or spiritually, unborn babies are truly and genuinely human. This means that the abortion option isn't simply a question of birth control. It's ultimately a question of death control. Once you're pregnant, You're no longer facing the choice of whether or not to bring a baby into existence. That's no longer an option. The baby already exists. The issue now is whether you will kill her or let her go on living. So, how do you decide? Abortion might seem like the way to go if the baby might make your future more difficult. The Alan Guttmacher Institute, an ardent promoter of abortion, surveyed 19,000 women who had had an abortion and found that 3/4 reported that having a baby could have seriously interfered with work, school, or other major responsibilities. Camille Williams, commenting on these findings with biting irony, says, "This should come as no surprise to anyone who has ever cared for a child, an aged parent, or a sick friend. Of course, any time you're responsible for another person's life, it'll seriously interfere with your own. It's often very hard. But does that give you the right to kill? Even if the abortion option seems best for you, it's not very good for your baby." You might protest, "I don't read any verse in the Bible that says I shouldn't have an abortion. Nowhere does the Lord say, 'Thou shalt not kill a fetus.'" Agreed. But neither does the Lord say, "Thou shalt not kill toddlers." He doesn't say, "Thou shalt not kill adolescents." He doesn't say, "Thou shalt not kill adults." He doesn't say, "Thou shalt not kill people with a different skin color." He doesn't say, "Thou shalt not kill poor people." He simply says, "Thou shalt not kill." One command covers all. Every human life is sacred under that divine command, and you and I have no right to destroy it. Not only is "thou shalt not kill" one of the Ten Commandments, it's the bedrock of civilization. Without respect for life, what's left? But you might say, isn't there more to it than that? We can't just talk about life. We need to consider quality of life. You might be concerned about your own quality of life, or you may be worried about your child's quality of life. Thelma Morrison and her husband thought they shouldn't give birth to their child unless Maggie could fend for herself. They didn't want her ever to be afraid or unhappy. So when they found out that Maggie had Down syndrome, they concluded that she'd be better off dead, and so they killed her. I sympathize with Thelma Morrison's pain, and I appreciate her honesty when she says plainly that she killed her baby. But I can't help asking, since when did parents have the obligation to kill any child whose life they figured wouldn't be happy enough or valuable enough to make it worth living? 2 weeks after Thelma Morrison's article appeared, the Toronto Star printed an open letter responding to Thelma, written by a girl named Michelle Reno. Michelle writes, "I am 14 years old and have a little brother. He's the greatest little kid I've ever met. He's so fun-loving, energetic, and caring. I love him with all my heart, and that's the best feeling in the world. My brother has Down syndrome. You seem to think that Down syndrome can destroy a person's life. I only wish you could see that it only alters it a little. I wish you had further researched Down syndrome before jumping to such conclusions. Your child could have had a life, not necessarily with you, but with another family who wanted her. I try very hard to see things your way, but I can't. You lost your little Maggie. For that, I'm sorry. You say you don't want to be judged by others. Well, you sure judged Maggie. She could have made it." That's the problem with the abortion option. It always involves a judgment. Even if no one is judging you, you are judging your child. You may judge that a child with special needs would be better off dead than alive, but how do you know that? You may judge that a child's life isn't worth changing your future plans. But what plans of yours are more important than saving the life of your own child? Jesus Christ teaches us to revere and affirm human life. He embraced and blessed little children. He loved the poor, the weak, the blind, the lame. And he takes it personally when we neglect or destroy those who are weak and vulnerable. What we do to them, we do to him. This means that the abortion option is not an acceptable option at all. It is literally dead wrong. Well, where does that leave you if you're already responsible for choosing abortion? I know that for many of you listening to me, that's a very real question. According to a recent cover story in Time magazine, it's estimated that more than 46% of American women will have had an abortion by the time they're 45. Maybe you're one of those. And let's not think that women are the only ones responsible for abortion. Men are equally responsible, maybe more so. Perhaps you fathered a child and then abandoned your responsibilities. Maybe you pressured the mother of your child into having an abortion that she didn't really want. If you're guilty in one way or another of the sin of abortion, by now the damage is done. What now? First of all, you need to face the facts if you haven't already done so. It may be hard to do, but you need to begin by saying what Thelma Morrison says. The truth is, I killed my baby. But don't stop there, thinking your choice of abortion was somehow justified by the circumstances. The next step is to tell God, Lord, I was wrong. Maybe I was in a difficult situation. I may even have had some good intentions, but I was wrong. I killed a child made in your image, and the truth is, I had no right to do it. Confess your sin to God and ask Him to forgive you for Jesus' sake. Jesus died in our place to pay for our sins, including the sin of abortion. Believe that and accept His forgiveness. Then ask Jesus to run your life. Stop making your own choices, and in the future let Him make your choices for you. If you're facing an unexpected pregnancy right now and are looking for help in making the right decision, I hope you'll contact us. Just be listening at the end of the program and we'll tell you how to get in touch. And when we hear from you, we'll try to put you in touch with someone who can provide the kind of help you need. If you're considering the abortion option, you need to know that there are better choices. Maybe not easier choices, but better choices. Don't choose abortion just because it seems like the only option available. It's not. There are at least two other possibilities to consider. You can give birth to your baby, and you may be able to provide her a home with lots of love. It will take a lot of courage and determination and dependence on God, but it can be done. You can choose life, even if it means adjusting your plans for the future. There's also another choice available. You can carry your baby until birth and then give him up for adoption. There are many couples on waiting lists who would love to adopt your baby as their own. Last year, over 50,000 women found families to adopt their unexpected children. I'm sure it wasn't easy to give those children up. It was a hard choice, but it was also a beautiful choice. These women knew that life is precious, and they gave that precious gift to their child and to the adoptive parents. They chose life. I pray that you will too.
Before it's time.